How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Tuesday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for wrapping up your April with me today. Coming up on the show, we are going to be looking at an unbelievable Game 5 between the Denver Nuggets and the LA Lakers, what it means for both sides, plus a look at the rest of the NBA picture, who that is on the brink of elimination has the best chance of coming back, and we'll get through the NHL story as well. So a lot to cover on this show today. Let's get to it by talking some basketball. The NBA's playoffs whittled down by a couple of teams last night, one in absolutely epic fashion, as the Denver Nuggets eliminate the Los Angeles Lakers in Game 5 of their Western Conference quarterfinal with a phenomenal performance from a number of different players, not the least of which was Jamal Murray, as he puts the candle on top, knocking down, for the second time this series, a jump shot over top of Anthony Davis's outstretched arms as the Denver Nuggets are moving on to the second round, continuing their defense of their NBA championship. And what an unbelievable showing from Jamal Murray, who there was a lot of talk going into that game that he was going to be scratched from this game because of the leg injury that he was dealing with. And they made sure to get him going right from the beginning. That there was no like, okay, you know what? Murray's only going to be out there as a decoy. Maybe we go at him. Maybe whatever. He put up like the first four shot attempts for the Nuggets in that game. Knocked down 5 points early and just set the tone that, hey, I'm here and I am exactly what you think I am. And you better be ready for 100% Jamal Murray, because maybe you didn't get 100% of him. But if that's less than 100%, I don't know what else it could be. It was so great to see what he was able to do out there against this Lakers team and the pressure that he was able to put on LA. And it was unexpected, and he was absolutely unleashed in this game. So much fun to watch Jamal Murray do his thing. But he wasn't the only Nugget who went off against the Lakers, as Michael Porter Jr. had the MPJ game. He was equally as incredible as Jamal Murray, and such a weapon from three. When the Nuggets kind of bogged down a little bit and the offense became a bit of an issue for them, credit the Lakers' defense, but he was the one who was kind of a spark for them, knocking shots down from three and creating a bit of a sense of urgency on the Lakers' side to try to get some things going and putting some pressure on them. When he is scoring like that, this team is just unbeatable. They might be anyway, but when you're already worried about Jokic and Murray and then Gordon on back cuts and stuff like that, it's not also fair to then have to deal with a 6'10" guy who's jacked that can just put up three after three after three. Cat might have broke something. But either way, that was such a explosive offensive game from him. And I do think that he probably feels like he can be like the guy on a team and lead them. And there is absolutely a version of MPJ's career where he is Kyle Kuzma on like post Lakers, where it's like, yeah, no, I can put up points. Or Jordan Poole this year with Washington. Yeah, I'll put up 30. That's fine. But he has got such an education in basketball with this team and has fit so perfectly into what they are doing. He is the one that you do worry about the most if this team, like as this team goes on, that he is going to be the one's like, you know what? I kind of want my own team now. And he might be the one to break this band up. But for now, he was extraordinary in that game last night. And again, Jokic let everyone else cook early. And this is, I think, a real good system that Denver has, where you know who the guy is on this team. It's Jokic. He's the best player in the NBA. That is abundantly clear right now. He is the straw that stirs the drink, all the different things you want to say, but he does such a great job of getting everyone else involved early. He doesn't need to get his shots early. He'll get them with 2 minutes left in the game to put you away, if he has to. But he will distribute, get everyone else involved in the game, get everyone activated, and make everyone feel included, and then he can go out and do his thing. Like, okay, we're all good here. All right, I'm gonna go win now, if that's cool. And he, along with Murray and Porter, did that. But I thought it was really good by Denver to get everyone involved in the offense early on, to get everyone heated up and ready for what was a sprint to the finish. And it was a sprint because of how sloppy Denver played throughout this game. This was an uncharacteristic game for the Nuggets. Way too many turnovers early on that let the Lakers kind of pull ahead. And this was one of those games where you look at it at halftime, Denver is not playing well. They had, I think it was 11 turnovers in the first quarter. They really struggled with the basketball. And then you look and, Lakers up three, huh? Denver played about as bad as you can expect them to play. And you're beating them by three? Does this not seem like a problem to you? And it was. Now, it's not like Denver pulled away in the second half. The Lakers were able to make this one very, very close down the stretch, and credit to them for that. And also credit to the Lakers for what they were able to do defensively to force some of those turnovers. But this was, there was a little bit of Denver playing with their food in this game. And they're not going to be able to do that in the next round against Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves. But this was not a sharp outing for Denver until the end. And they showed you at the end why they can be so dangerous. But that, the first three quarters of that game, quarters of that game, are why people think Denver might be a little bit more vulnerable this year. KCP comes up limping, early on. Jamal Murray is out there doing that thing on one leg anyway. And they lost depth from a season ago, right? With No Brown, among others. So there was a bit of, hey, can Denver be got, especially with how well Minnesota played against Phoenix? It's like, is there something there? And then Denver reminded us in the fourth quarter, like, no, don't. Just don't. They were tremendous. On the Lakers side, it was a vintage LeBron performance. He was everything this team needed him to be in this game. When they needed him defensively, he would go over and make a big play. When they needed him offensively, he would bowl into four players and get to the rim. You obviously see some of the, I'm going to say, limitations. That's grading based on him. 99.9% of the world would be in that type of physical condition and say it's the best physical condition they've ever been in their life. But for LeBron, it is somewhat limited given what he was in his prime, where there was the one play, they're rushing up the floor, he goes charging in and goes to lay it in, and it comes up a little bit short. Denver pushes back the other way. They get a three. It's a five-point swing. And you start to feel like, again, I'm not saying it's over for LeBron or anything like that, but like 3 years ago, LeBron is throwing that one down with flourish, and that spot you can start to see the deteriorating, even the slightest bit. But this was, other than that, this was a great LeBron game. No one else on the Lakers did have one of those types of games. AD played fine, but definitely got banged up there with the weird shoulder thing. Reeves had a pretty good game, but Russell, again, was kind of doo-doo. Hachimura was better than he was in game four or throughout the series, but that still doesn't mean he was good. So they didn't have enough around LeBron. And so that brings you now to the offseason questions. LeBron is technically a free agent and could go anywhere. My money is that he stays there, and my money is that the Lakers do draft Bronny and make that sort of a thing happen. But the rest of this roster needs an upgrade. That there is no question about it. And the problem is, as everyone knows, there aren't a whole lot of bullets in that chamber. They kind of used all of them in the disastrous Russell Westbrook trade that I think, while Russ has started to cook again with the Clippers, that trade has set the Lakers back post-championship run. And it is noteworthy, at least, that KCP is moving on after winning a championship last year, and he was one of the guys who was let go. And like, if they would have just kept that band together, I don't understand why they didn't, or at least make a greater effort to, then we're talking about a different Lakers team over, like, post-pandemic. But they need to figure out how to get something else in there, because it just, offensively, this team, when it's just set at 5-on-5 in the half court, they're just not good enough. And that was on full display against the defending champions. A couple other notes from last night. The Boston Celtics are just simply too good for the Miami Heat. You have Porzingis go down with an injury early in the game. You have Tatum not really showing up at the peak of his powers in this one. A couple highlights here and there, but this was not a Tatum game by any stretch. And they still whoop that ass in this game. Brown was great. White was phenomenal. And Miami started to get a hint of a comeback in the second half. And then White throwdown dunk, White throwdown dunk, Brown throwdown dunk, and it's over. Boston is just simply too good right now for whatever Miami is throwing out at them. And now Cleveland and Orlando are in a rock fight in the 4-5. So not that Boston needs the help going into this, but I do think they are going to have a significant rest advantage to go along with a gigantic talent edge over whoever they play in the Eastern Conference semifinal once this series wraps up. No KP would be interesting, though, because Porzingis really is kind of that final infinity stone for this offense that makes them darn right unguardable and causes matchup problems everywhere for anyone. But if he is not out, this is still, or if he's not there, this is still a very good basketball team. He said it's all good. Again, I don't anticipate a whole lot of resistance in this series from Miami, so odds are they're going to have a rather significant amount of time to rest, much like Denver and Minnesota now get to wait till Saturday, which is huge for Denver. I forgot to say that before. Closing that series out really does help, like, Murray rest, KCP rest, and lets them get back to full strength going up against Minnesota starting on Saturday. But for Boston, they probably don't need Porzingis to... Well, they certainly don't need Porzingis to win this series. They probably honestly don't need him to win the next series. But the way Brunson is playing, they probably need him to beat the Knicks. So that gets a little bit dicey for this Boston team. And I think they need Porzingis 100% if they have a hope in hell of hanging with the Denver Nuggets in the NBA Finals or whoever gets there beyond that. But that's a sneaky big injury for the Boston Celtics, so we'll see what happens out of that. And Oklahoma City just absolutely styled on the New Orleans Pelicans. There was a lot of, you know, maybe this is like a 5-6-7 game series. Like, New Orleans is gritty. It's a, you know what it is? It's a bad matchup for OKC, the size. And look, I was saying it too. Like, New Orleans matches up really well with Oklahoma City. And then you watch it for a second. I was like, oh, nope. No, they don't. Oklahoma City is just too good. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continues to take step after step. Chet Holmgren is exceptional. And the depth pieces around it are good. Do they hang with Denver? Probably not. The 4-5 matchup is Dallas against the Clippers. I would favor OKC in any game there. So they are in a great spot. But they reminded everyone, like, look, we were the one seed this year, and that was for a reason. So I do think that there is a lot of flexing going on out in OKC right now. Quick jump into the hockey as the Tampa Bay Lightning season is done following a loss against the Florida Panthers in Game 5 of their Eastern Conference quarterfinal. And the main takeaway from this is that the Lightning just weren't close. And this whole week in sports, week and a bit in sports, has kind of felt like the end of some eras going on here, right? Golden State feels like they're at the end of the dynasty. Kevin Durant got swept in the first round. LeBron lost in 5. And now the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have dominated the better part of the last decade, they just got knocked out with a whimper in 5 games in their quarterfinal series. So it feels like the teams that dominated the 2010s into the back part of the 2000s, or into the beginning part of the 2020s, starting to fall off a little bit, which is understandable. But yeah, Tampa Bay, the main takeaway is they just weren't close. The thing that bothered me early on, they had a couple of power plays, and it's like, this is your chance to jump out in front and really get rolling. And they didn't. There was no urgency. They just looked overwhelmed by the Panthers. And that's kind of how the whole game looked. Tampa Bay gets back into it with a big Hedman shot from the blue line that finds its way through. But aside from that, there wasn't a whole lot going on for Tampa Bay in this game. And they looked done. And that leads to a lot of big questions. First of all, Florida looks incredible. I think they do absolute damage to the Boston Bruins in the next round. And I just, any Leafs people who thought maybe if they've got Florida, it would have been easier. It wouldn't have been, would have been harder. Probably would be done by now. So, that's that. And talking about end of eras, it's nice that while all of these big things are changing, it's nice that the, you know, the Leafs crapping the bed is, just still going to be there for us. But this now leads to big Steven Stamkos discussions in the NHL, because he is a free agent now. And made it rather public at the beginning of the offseason, or at the beginning of the regular season, sorry, that he was not necessarily thrilled that he's going into the season essentially lame duck here, right? With an expiring contract. He didn't like that there were no extension talks in the summer, and so he was a little bit frustrated. And now, I think you can see why Tampa Bay did that. Not that Stamkos is the reason they lost, not even a little bit. He was one of four noticeable players in this game. You noticed Stamkos, Kucherov, you noticed Point, and you noticed Hedman. After that, a little bit of Cirelli, and that was it. And that's the problem, is that this team has had their depth bled from them because of the salary cap and all of those good key pieces of championship teams, the Colemans, the Gourds, all of those have been forced out of town because they want to get paid what they deserve, and the Tampa Bay Lightning literally can't because of the salary cap. And now you have a big one with Steven Stamkos coming up. And I don't for a second think that Tampa Bay should bring him back. I think that, like, they have had an amazing run with him. He is the greatest Lightning of all time, blah, 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 blah. But if this team is going to move on competitively, I don't think they can lock that kind of money into him anymore. I think it needs to be built around Hedman, Kucherov, and Point. And one of the more creative front offices in this entire National Hockey League, getting that much extra cap space to work with, I think makes this team a real threat going into next year. I think I saw Mark Lazarus pointing out how well Stamkos would fit with Connor Bedard out in Chicago next year. That would, I think, be a great fit. Obviously, Toronto is going to go through some upheaval. There's going to be at least rumors of that going into next year. So I think there'd be quite a frenzy for Steven Stamkos, and I think the price probably goes up a little bit. Or not from where he's at now, but I do think that he gets a considerable amount of money still. And I just don't think the Lightning at this point can afford to necessarily pay that. But like I said, on the Panthers side, not enough people are talking about how great this team is. And I know that's a classic sports thing, but they looked every bit like a division winner and looked every bit like a team that could threaten for the Stanley Cup. And look, they bulldozed their way through the series. Barkov didn't score until last night. Tkachuk had a point in every game in the series. Still a little quiet. And Bennett was out for a couple of games here, and they still just barely got any resistance from the Tampa Bay Lightning. So this is a team to be reckoned with going forward. And I think they steamroll Boston in the next round. Quickly on Vegas against Dallas. Are we still upset about Vegas's whole thing? Because the whole situation, they played with a team that had $4 million extra over the salary cap, which in the regular season, yeah, would be illegal. In the playoffs, not a rule. So I think people need to stop bitching about it. But also, this gigantic advantage that they had by not having a couple of the best players on planet Earth, that they were able to take advantage of this, also meant that they had to slip into this wild card spot and play a really, really, really good Dallas Stars team. Now, it's the West. You'd have to play a really good team no matter where you're going. But if this team was fully healthy, like, maybe they don't make the hurdle move. But if this team is fully healthy, are they competing with the Canucks for top spot in the Pacific and maybe they're playing Nashville right now? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I think people just want something to be upset about and want this whole Vegas thing to be like this grand cheating thing. It's not. Not having Stone in your lineup for the final quarter, half, or whatever of the year that it was, is not an advantage. It makes your path to a Stanley Cup very difficult. Does it give you some extra money to play around with at the trade deadline? You bet it does. But there are consequences to it, and one of those is you have to be the road team. Now, the road team thing hasn't really mattered, but you have to face a number one seed and a really deserving one at that. So I think we can all just calm down about that, right? Probably not. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast today. If you are watching, anyway, for those listening, later on we're going to send out a part two. It is a replay of the Jose Aldo legacy look that I did summer last year around a Volkanovski fight. Aldo was coming back, and so I thought this was a good time to remind everyone of how awesome he was. So that is part of our UFC coverage coming out today. I will see if I can get something that works video-wise up for it, but that might just be a podcast exclusive. So check out this podcast wherever you listen to your pods. Find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Primetime Klein, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK. You can email this show, couchpotatodiary@yahoo.com. That is it for me. If you're watching this, make sure you subscribe and like, and I will talk to all of you later. Have a great day, everyone.